Whoever you are, wherever you have come from, whoever you love, we welcome you. My name is Kathy Walker. My spouse, Saul Flanner, and I are assisting Logan Bialik with today's lay-led service. Our guest musician this morning is Kevin Richards, the founder and executive director of Roots of American Music, a talented vocalist who also plays electric and acoustic guitar, fiddle, banjo, and mandolin. Kevin has entertained audiences across the U.S. for over a quarter century. We are delighted he could join us today.
Our cellist lighting this morning is from Reinhold Niebuhr, entitled, We Must Be Saved. Nothing worth doing is completed in our lifetime.
Therefore, we are saved by hope.
Nothing true or beautiful or good makes complete sense in any immediate context of history.
Therefore, we are saved by faith.
Nothing we do, however virtuous, can be accomplished alone.
Therefore, we are saved by love.
No virtuous act is quite as virtuous from the standpoint of our friend or foe as from our own.
Therefore, we are saved by the final form of love, which is forgiveness.
This morning, we light our chalice in recognition of the hope, faith, love, and forgiveness continuously bestowed on us by the people of this congregation.
I turned 29 in Haiti. After a day of entertaining children at rural medical clinics, there was a dinner of rice, popcorn, plantain, and goat, waiting for me at the parish hall where we were staying. In the journal I kept during our week there, I wrote about having to fight back tears as the parish staff and clinic team sung happy birthday to me. At the end of that night's journal entry, I added, my life has been altered forever by the people here. It is hard for me to put into words. 12 years later, it still is. Saul and I have only been to Haiti that one time, but we feel a strong connection to the country and its people, probably because his parents continue to lead medical clinics there. They are headed to Haiti again in October, their first visit since the earthquake. When Saul and I heard Logan was going to Haiti with the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee in March, both of us were very excited to hear about her experience. And of course, what better way for her to share that experience than a lay-led service for this community? It has been our privilege to work with Logan on this morning's service and to hear her insights into supporting a just recovery for Haiti from the ground up. This morning, I invite you to open yourself to hope, to listen, to reflect, and to learn. Come, let us worship together.
The following prayer is adapted from a service given during Logan's visit to Haiti by the Reverend Catherine Jesch. Spirit of life, teach us to love this earth, our home. We dwell together on this tiny, fragile planet, this beautiful blue orb floating in the embrace of space. Help us to appreciate your abundant gifts, to be alive in this magnificent universe, to participate in the dance of life with senses to perceive it, lungs to breathe it, and organs to draw nourishment from it is a wonder beyond words. Teach us gratitude. This is also a dark time, filled with suffering and uncertainty. Like living cells in a larger body, we feel the trauma of our world. Teach us not to be afraid of our own anguish or anger or fear, for these responses show us the depth of our caring and the truth of our interconnectedness with all beings. Create in us compassion for the suffering of the earth and all her beings. Open our ears to the call of the earth. Give us the courage to follow our hearts, to reach toward that which brings us joy, and knowing how deeply our lives intertwine, lead us to join with others with whom we can find strength and common purpose. Allow us to turn our minds and hearts toward one another in trust, giving love, seeking comfort, and celebrating together all the days of our lives. Amen.
Thank you.
Begmawan by Joya Mukherjee. From an introduction to Paul Farmer's Haiti after the earthquake. Haiti was founded by Righteous Revolution in 1804 and became the first black republic. It was the first country to break the chains of slavery, the first to force Emperor Napoleon to retreat, and the only to aid Simon Bolivar in his struggle to liberate the indigenous people and slaves of Latin America from their colonial oppressors. Tragically, this history of liberty and self-determination has drawn two centuries of political and economic ire from powerful countries, resulting in policies which have served to impoverish the people of Haiti. Feared by Jefferson for their successful uprising, extorted for 150 million francs to compensate France for the loss of its property, occupied by the U.S. military between 1915 and 1934 to stifle European influences in Latin America, disrespected in their quest for democracy by dictators and coup d'etats backed by Western countries, the free people of Haiti had been continually reshackled politically and economically. Why does this history matter in the face of the 2010 earthquake? Because this history and the constant fight and struggle of the Haitian people for justice and dignity are their greatest resource. It is this history that makes Haiti mighty, mighty without wealth, mighty without natural resources, mighty without arable land and without arms. Amidst the rubble of the houses, buildings, and schools in front of the once grand national palace stands Negmawan, the symbol of Haiti. Negmawan at once embodies the marooned man, the runaway slave, and the free man. He symbolizes the complex history of the Haitian people. Stolen from Africa, marooned on an island, and liberated through a brave and radical revolution. Shackles broken, machete in hand, the free man does not hide. Rather, he blows a conch to gather others to fight for the freedom and dignity of all people. For the self-evident truth that all men are created equal. Negmawan is the indefatigable spirit of Haiti's people, a people profoundly and proudly woven to their history. When I arrived in Haiti on Thursday, January 14th, 2010, I asked my friend who was driving, "Côté Negmawan, where is the free man?" "Lila," he said, "he is here." And as we rounded the corner behind Champ Mar, the plaza in front of the devastated palace where thousands had already made their homes, there, rising from the dust of the still trembling earth, stood the statue of Negmawan. I was drawn by the image out of the car, and as I stood, weeping, an old woman put her arm around me. She too was crying. I said, "Negmawan toujours campé." "The free man is still standing." And she replied powerfully, "Chérie, Negmawan pap jam kazi." "My dear, the free man will never be broken." It is with this surety that we must stand with Haiti, a country whose spirit and people will never be broken, and work in solidarity toward the future the Haitian people deserve.
Earthquake in Haiti, Cultivating a Just Recovery, an excerpt from the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee's website. Over a year and a half since a catastrophic earthquake rocked Port-au-Prince, hundreds of thousands of people continue to subsist in precarious situations. The international aid response remains mired in problems ranging from political gridlock to poor coordination. As a result, more than 800,000 are still living in temporary camps, more than two-thirds of which are informal, where they struggle to survive with no certainty about what will happen to them. People are unable to meet their basic needs of shelter, food, water, and sanitation. Haiti is the Western Hemisphere's poorest nation. For many people, daily survival was a challenge even before the earthquake. Today, their lives are infinitely more difficult. In the years to come, how Haiti rebuilds and recovers will bear the stamp of the global community's values and priorities. The Unitarian Universalist Service Committee stands with those who are working to reverse the cycle of collapse and dependence that has plagued Haiti throughout its history. Our goal is to support earthquake survivors in both Port-au-Prince and the countryside by expanding their access to livelihoods, shelter, protection, representation, and psychosocial support. The UUSC is employing all of its tools, partnership programs, policy and advocacy efforts, mobilizing and educating UUSC members, and engaging volunteers to support their partners in building a just recovery for Haiti from the ground up. In Port-au-Prince, our partners with UUSC support have created child protection committees in 10 camps, trained hundreds of community activists to work against gender-based violence in the camps, and helped to organize economic training to get hundreds of women street vendors back on their feet. Throughout Haiti, the UUSC has trained 90 Haitian community organizers to help survivors positively manage the biological responses to trauma. Together, the UUSC is acting in solidarity with survivors in Haiti to make a positive difference in their lives and their communities.
It's 4 a.m. My alarm clock sounds, though it doesn't need to. I'm already awake, lying in bed, pulse quickening as I watch the minutes pass by, waiting for this moment. Time to get up, time to go, time to grab my bag and leave all of my comforts yet again for a foreign environment. These ideas of adventures that fill me with such exhilaration always have a way of leaving me in a state of foreboding as the reality draws near. That morning of March 10th, 2012, I set off on my journey to the well-known yet mysterious island, or half an island for that matter, of Haiti. I was participating in the UUSC's Haiti Just Works trip, which I had been led to discover by my avid UUSC supporter of a mother. After having applied, received all the vaccinations, read all of the required readings, and participated in a conference call, I was prepared for my journey, keeping my mind open to the new world perspectives I was hopefully to gain. Upon arriving at the airport in Port-au-Prince, our flight was greeted by live traditional Haitian music surrounding the entrance. While one part of me was thrilled by this exotic cultural display, the other part of me couldn't help but think of how perfectly this embodied the romanticized vision of Caribbean culture. Throughout my trip, I came to realize more and more how easily the first world idealization of exotic third world countries clouds our understandings of the reality of their troubles. Every new sight and experience I had grounded me in reality, and this awareness I found to be both a blessing and a burden. Meeting up with this group of volunteers, I was not surprised to find the majority of them to be well-traveled, socially and politically liberal retirees who were eager to expand their already open minds. The leaders of our group, Wendy and Evan, were two energetic individuals who maneuvered our way through Haiti with incredible ease and awareness, which was undoubtedly due to the enormous amount of time they'd spent in the country post-earthquake. Though the average age of everyone was a good generation or two ahead of mine, I found it quite a blessing to be with people who had lived so much more of their unique lives than I had. Their stories and perspectives were not taken for granted. The first couple of days spent in Haiti were filled with a lot of inner turmoil and confusion as I tried to process all the things I was seeing and experiencing. The initial 24 hours were spent in Port-au-Prince, though the only real glimpses I caught were those from a car window as we were transported to and from our safely gated hotel. From what I could see, though, the city was still in a state of disarray, with concrete rubble covering the streets, rows upon rows of makeshift cardboard homes, and thousands of people milling around, going about their daily lives. It was certainly no Paris, to say the least. I suppose what bothered me the most, however, amid these images of apparent suffering, was how familiar they were to me, after seeing so many similar places depicted in the movies and on the news. Shouldn't this extreme poverty be more of a shock to me? It's incredible how much the media can nourish our imaginations with these images so that we may form superficial understandings of places we've never been to. I was disappointed by how desensitized I seemed to be. I wanted to be impassioned, moved to action, but instead I was merely fascinated. I suppose real feeling of compassion are born from something deeper than the aesthetic, but I had yet to realize that in the first full day of my journey. Day two's trek up to the central plateau where we would be staying for the remainder of the week was the perfect opportunity to observe Haitian society in its raw, natural state. And while it was a nice glimpse of reality, it also helped foster my already not so glamorous impression of the country, unfortunately, what with the lack of order and chaos of people in the streets and the vast amount of litter scattered about everywhere. As one who has yet to wrap my mind around the workings of the world, it was difficult for me to sort out what I was seeing. Was this poverty, or was this merely a foreign culture, a foreign way of life? As a UU, I'm a pretty firm believer in the concept of cultural relativism. However, as righteous as that may be, it makes the task of helping people a much more complicated issue. It's not that easy to decide what a country needs from such a detached, faraway place caught up in the false notions of idealism. This thought troubled me as I continued to realize the extent of my ignorance about Haiti. But little did I know, the UUSC has been aware of this issue for about 50 years. The JustWorks program in Haiti is one in which volunteers come to help build and design the UUSC-sponsored eco-village, which is intended to house those who were displaced after the earthquake in Haiti. The UUSC designs their humanitarian projects through their eye-to-eye partnership program, where they partner with an organization in the country of interest who has similar goals and visions with theirs. This alliance helps the UUSC facilitate dialogue about what the country needs, giving them a more intimate perspective on the cultural dynamics. Currently, the UUSC has established partnerships with 11 organizations in Haiti, giving over $175,000 in grants. The EcoVillage project is partnered with the Papai Peasant Movement, or MPP for short, which is an organization that teaches peasant farmers sustainable farming techniques so that they may be more self-sufficient in producing their own food and income. In keeping with the old proverb, teach a man to fish and he'll never go hungry again, the UUSC and MPP partnership stands to promote the empowerment of Haitian people while keeping in mind the concept of sustainability. The JustWorks program was referred to as a service learning trip. Thus, there was an educational portion in the component in addition to our service work. Most of the learning that we did was about the MPP organization, as we spent the week on the compound itself, taking tours, watching demonstrations, and meeting and talking with the founder of the group. For me, I suppose this portion of the trip was the biggest eye-opener to the intricacies of the people and the culture of Haiti, as it allowed us a closer look at their lives, shedding light on some of the universalities of human beings. At this point, it became clear to me that social justice in a struggling country means more than wealthy nations barging in to clean up the mess. It delves deeper into more complex concepts, many of which find their presence in the core UU values. As we learned more about the Papai peasant movement, it became increasingly evident that there are many aspects of the Haitian way of life that reflect UU principles. The ingenuity of the Haitian people was focused mostly on ways of living off the land. Every piece, every asset of their available resources was used for some end, whether that be making fertilizer with earthworms, using the sun to decompose excretory waste, or making tire gardens with all of the excess tires laying around. As we toured the MPP compound and learned about these different methods they use for cultivating crops, I grew more and more amazed with the level of resourcefulness. For me, it was a really true testament to the quasi-spiritual connection of humans and Earth. It's really easy to forget about the importance of the planet when we live in a way that is so often detached from it. But as we say in UUism, we must strive to respect the interdependent web of which we are a part. Not unexpectedly, the simpler life seems to make such attention to nature quite more accessible. The theme of sustainability had a very strong presence in the ideologies of the UUSC and MPP alike. As a social justice organization, the UUSC sought not to merely fix all of the immediate problems in Haiti, but to catalyze holistic change so that their communities may evolve to better things. Teach a man to fish is most of all a message of sustainability. Affecting lasting change is the most effective means of improving people's lives. I saw this ideal of sustainability also reflected in the MPP practices, as they had special programs for training youth in farming. I got to see this in action as we toured some people's homes and met teenage kids who were growing gardens of their own to provide for their families. Better crop cultivation and self-sufficiency is the most important goal of MPP. And the only way to make that last is not only teaching the adults how to do it, but by teaching the youth as well. This sustainable perspective harvests not only crops, but also hope for a better future. Being that the majority of the peasant farmers who come to the MPP Training Center are illiterate, a traditional method of education using reading and writing would be thoroughly ineffective. Therefore, the trainers at the MPP compound use something called the popular education model, which uses songs and illustrations to encourage people to draw meaning and knowledge from their own life experiences. From what we learned, most of these messages, meanings and messages have to do with the strength of unity in overcoming challenges and, so to speak, overpowering the big fish. As I saw it, this popular education model spoke largely to the idea of the universal human capacity not only to learn, but also to have wisdom. In the peasant farmers I saw fostered an enormous amount of raw insight, and not only that, but also the power of such insight in improving lives. In an effort to be cliche, I might say, I learned there that it is not intelligence that carries us forward, but rather wisdom. During our habitual reflection circle one evening, we had the opportunity to learn one of the songs they taught the trainees at the compound. It was, of course, in Creole, which made for many poorly pronounced words and confusing rhythms on our part. However, as we continued to plug away at the words, some Haitian passerby noticed, and thrilled to hear a bunch of Americans sing, albeit poorly, in their language, they joined in. It was the perfectly cliche moment, particularly because the song was all about unity and the drive for prosperity. To top it off even more, being the UUs that we were, we then tried to teach the Haitian people this little light of mine. Unfortunately, that was less successful, but the idea of it was good enough to satisfy. Regardless, the symbolism in that moment just screamed of cross-cultural unity, particularly through music, and as corny as it seemed, the experience of such unity was quite more instilling than its mere conceptualization. During the morning of each day spent in Haiti, our group traveled over to the UUSC-sponsored eco-village to help the villagers continue to build their new home. It had only been 8 months since they had moved in when we came along, but they had already made enormous steps towards turning their village from a refugee camp to a home. Flowers smiled brightly from empty aluminum cans outside the doors of every house we passed, a symbol of hope for a bright future ahead. Around us, mothers multitasked attending of their children with washing, cooking, and singing. The men were all building and gardening, using skills they'd been taught at the MPP compound. Our presence in the village had anything but that of saviors. We were observers and extra hands, helping the men build a fence and some goat pens, often sitting back in awe as they accomplished things many think only machines can do. The amount of resourcefulness they exhibited was quite incredible, to say the least. Who knew there were branches of knowledges that Americans didn't already have? Perhaps the most moving experience of the eco-village was the process of communication that took place between the villagers and us. The language barrier was obviously present, often making it seem as though communication is impossible, that finding common ground is unlikely. We were required to use communication without language, a challenge that most of us hadn't taken on in a very long time, yet also a challenge whose end result carried a great lesson. Language, though it often seems to be the most efficient and effective way to form bonds between people, is also perhaps the most effective means of creating barriers between these connections. Once we had figured out how to use hand gestures and familiar words to get our message across, it hardly felt like there was any communication barrier at all. On our last day at the compound, we had the chance to sit and chat with Siobhan Jean-Baptiste, the founder of MPP and planter of 20 million trees in Haiti, and ask him any questions we had. Normally, I would consider talking about such an event something of an extraneous, only important and interesting to the person telling it detail. But in this case, I found this interaction extraordinary enough to be worth noting. Siobhan Jean-Baptiste started the MPP almost 40 years ago in an effort to empower the peasant population in Haiti, who, at one point in the country's history, had such a perceived level of inferiority that their birth certificates were different than those who dwelled in the city. Of course, as with most cases of inequality, the lack of privilege that the peasant farmers lived with was largely the cause of a corrupt government system and a resulting lack of resources. With the severe inaccessibility of schools, most of them are illiterate, and living in poverty, they are extremely vulnerable to the government's corrupt policies. Siobhan's forming of the Papai peasant movement was an effort toward peasant rights by giving them the tools and the knowledge to form communities and have fruitful harvests. And indeed, MPP is an organization that has its foundation of groups and subgroups, almost as if it's a country of its own, a country independent of the Haitian government. Of course, Siobhan faced a lot of resistance from the government and had even been a victim of multiple assassination attempts. However, with a quality reminiscent of Martin Luther King Jr., he explained to us that MPP has its own goals and visions, and it's up to the government whether or not they wish to support them. Either way, they will continue to move forward. Perhaps it's clear now that the opportunity to talk to Siobhan was essentially the chance to get inside the head of a true revolutionary. I was personally baffled to meet someone who had made such significant changes in the lives of so many, not to mention enduring many risks to his personal safety. Taking this into account, and still muddling over questions of compassion and universal human worth, I took it upon myself to ask Siobhan what it was that drove him to continue moving forward through all the adversity and the fear he must have faced. In his reply, he explained that he has always had a strong faith in God, and within every man and woman he sees God manifested. Therefore, for him, serving others was serving God. Now for me, when it comes to God, I most often find myself resting comfortably in the realm of uncertainty. But God believer or not, I think the idea of being manifested in every of it being manifested in every person could very well be another way of saying that there is inherent worth and dignity in every being. Which is, though I don't need to remind you, the very first of the 7 UU principles. And so that was it. Those were the words I was seeking to hear, or rather, the mouth I was seeking to hear them from. Authentic compassion is born from recognition of universal human worth and dignity. Not only that, but from compassion is born unity. And what is even more, the child of unity and compassion is social justice. Marcel Proust once said that familiarity keeps us from knowing things as they really are. During my week spent in Haiti, I was engulfed in new experiences, new people, and new thoughts, which is another way to say a host of unfamiliarity. The result of that, however, and perhaps most importantly, was a renewed understanding of the world. Haiti is certainly not a glamorous place. In fact, amidst its poverty, ruin, and instability, it could easily fall into the devastated category. But if there's anything experience gave me that books and news stories did not, it was a sense of hope. The fallen walls of Haiti have provided us with the opportunity to knock down the metaphorical barriers between our cultures. From devastation has come a greater effort to understand. In this state of brokenness, we have the chance to put things back together in an even better state than they were before.
Once each month, we take a special collection for an organization whose work in the world we want to support. I'm sure it comes as no surprise to anyone that this month our special collection is for the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee and will go towards their efforts in Haiti and throughout the world. All undesignated funds given today will be given to the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee. If you are a guest, we invite you to take a candle from the basket as a token of our welcome. We are glad you are with us. The offering will now be gratefully received.
Prayer by Barbara Ford. In these times of limitless grief, we have but two choices. Our hearts can break, or they can break wide open. The broken heart can fall, clutching and desperate, into a deep chasm of loneliness. The heart broken open joins with the pain of a million other hearts and knows finally that it is never alone. May we choose the communion of broken hearts over isolation. And with that choosing, may we act together in love toward the healing of the heart and the world. What we call a beginning is often the end. And to make an end is to make a beginning. The end is where we start from. We shall not cease from exploration, and the end of all our exploring will be to arrive where we started and know the place for the first time. Go now in peace.